I can see you through the foliage.
Hi.
Squirrel energy. Like, I need to put the nuts somewhere. They need to be somewhere. They need to be hidden. Nobody can look at my nuts.
Good, clean smoke.
I need more time. You need to perform something else. You use too many spices in your cooking to be British.
Exactly.
I was like, ooh, Marilena Monrona. It's truly begging me to do a subscription.
Someone stole Marilyn Monroe's potatoes.
If you're watching this and you stole some of the potatoes, give them back. All right. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome, everybody, to the third episode of the Niche Artifact Podcast, where we're going to be reacting to Stage Exit.
Yes.
The Golden Age of Hollywood.
Yes.
And we also have a special announcement coming up towards the end of the pod. So please stay tuned for that. Very special announcement, I would say. I can see you through the foliage.
Hi.
As always, I am here joined by...
Hi, I'm Robin De Silva. I'm the founder of Niche Artifact.
And I'm Brother La Monja. I'm a performer with Niche Artifact and a trustee for the charity as well. Right, so should we... Let me tell you a story about work first.
How was your week, Ben? I need to tell you about my Sunday.
So, I used to work retail, and now I work for the company, from the same company, right? But, like, the business part of the company, not retail. But for some reason, I was in the office on a Sunday, because we were doing an event, blah, blah, blah. And it was just me and another person there. And this person went on their lunch, came back, and I just hear them scream, "Ro, close the doors! It's flooding!" And I was like, no. And so our entire event space was flooding because one of the drains was blocked and it was coming out through skylights. And if you've ever wondered what happens if a, I can't say the name, but if a shop that sells bath fizzies floods, it's just like what you're imagining, just foam everywhere, frothing at the mouth. So that was my Sunday.
So you've had a good start to the week?
Yes, absolutely. But now I'm here. Welcome, everybody.
Hi. Yeah, yeah. So we've had a very exciting week.
Yes.
We've done our penultimate rehearsal for Dystopia, which will be on the 20th of September, 7 p.m. at Nottingham Central Library. So, so incredibly proud of everyone.
Me too.
Like a very proud mama last rehearsal.
Yeah, it was definitely, I could see it all. It was beautiful. It was crisp. It was pristine. We have two amazing drag queens. We have Priscilla Shana Krakow and Danny Magic.
Yeah.
Serena Eden, who... Can we talk about the journey for a minute?
Yes, of course.
So, Serena. Hi, Serena. Hope you're watching. Serena Eden is this fantastic Nottingham-based vocalist. Mm-hmm. And she joined on Erotica, which we'll talk about at some point.
Yeah.
And it was her first Niche Artifact. And... the way she has blossomed, the way she has grown as a performer, as a singer, the way she used to just go on stage and sing beautifully, but be very apologetic about it.
Yeah.
And now she has blossomed into this powerhouse.
Yeah.
She is doing a very, very cool number for... Well, she's doing a lot of very cool numbers.
Yeah.
But she's doing a specifically, like, bone-chilling number that, to give a bit of... like insider tea, the song that she's singing was written to not be able to be sung by humans.
Yeah, that's true.
And she kills it, knocks it out of the park every single time.
And she just learned it a few days ago. You know,
brought it to rehearsal.
It was a song idea that I brought to her, and she really has done an incredible job of just like, because I think it's a testament to what the community does for the people involved with the performers. Like,
yeah.
Serena was so very shy and very nervous, and now seeing her on stage, and she posted a story on Instagram the other day that was really touching, being like, oh, this is a video of her like in 2020, could you imagine where I am now, and then a video of her on stage performing with Niche. So the growth for Serena has been incredible, so we're very excited to see her there.
Yeah, I feel like her and I have had a very similar journey in the sense of like, we wanted to be a part of the industry, but the industry kind of didn't want us to be a part of the industry.
Yeah.
And like the way that we have found our niche.
Da-da-da.
it's just really special, and I'm so proud of her. I'm so, so proud of her. And then we also have Ray Piper, sorry, Milady Burlesque, who's been rehearsing in Germany.
Yes, she'll be flying back especially for the final rehearsal.
Tomorrow, I believe. So excited.
So we have final rehearsals coming up next week, which will be a full dress rehearsal.
And then me, would you like to say anything about...
Yes, and the incredible Row. Yes, obviously, you're amazing.
Thank you. I'm very excited about Dystopia. I think it's going to be a moment.
I know I keep saying this, but it literally will be the best show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of effort, everyone's really turned up for the rehearsals and the ideas and the commitment.
The art. Some of the previews of the art that I've seen.
Yes.
Serena Eden, aside from being a fantastic performer, is also submitting a sculpture. Mm. And
it's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Anyway, so...
In fact, most of the artwork, everyone's been quite... In the Niche Artifact group chat, where the community kind of, like, has their talks, there haven't been that many previews on there, but I'm kind of grateful for that, because that means that, you know, someone on the chat put the other day, like, oh, you know, everyone posts what they're doing, and I was just like, well, the show's so soon, everyone's nearly finished, so they're probably... I can't wait for the actual reveal.
So
I've not seen most of them, than little snippets, so I'm going to be just as surprised as everybody.
Which also sort of... goes along with how you have created this community where you know you don't have to be like, what can I see the progress? What are you doing? How's it going? Yeah. You just know that your artists are going to be there and they're going to be fantastic. And I'm really proud.
Yeah. And then also DJ Wilson. DJ Wilson Shaw will be playing his music, very talented music producer.
Yeah. I did, Priscilla and I did a lip sync to a remix that he did of a Marina and the Diamonds song, which was fantastic.
That was for Birth of Pride.
That was for Birth of Pride. So before we get on with the episode of the pod, I just want to take a few seconds to thank our sponsor for today's episode.
Yes, we've got our first sponsor. So,
If you notice, we are in a different location. We are today, where are we?
We're filming at the Hole in the Wall. It's a pub run by Drew Grimshaw Sparks, and he has graciously offered to be one of our sponsors.
So yeah.
They will be looking into doing some fundraising for us.
Thank you, Drew, for all
the things that we're trying to do with the local artists.
Yeah.
Providing us a space to rehearse, so it just feels natural that...
And a space to do the pod.
Yes.
So we're very grateful, Drew. Thank you for being our first sponsor.
Yes.
Yeah, it feels really special. And if you haven't been to the Hole in the Wall, please... please come on over. There is things happening every day. There's a pool table. There is vintage video games.
Residential
drag queens.
There's drag shows here. You know, it's I think it's going to be very up and coming in the queer scene in Nottingham.
Yeah. Karaoke. Come on over. If you haven't been to the Hole in the Wall, you can check it out. We'll put the socials up.
Yeah.
We'll put the address as well. It's really cool. I love the Hole. It's our new home.
It is.
Yeah. So, should we get started?
Yes. So, we're going to start with a little deep dive into stage exit.
Yes.
Into the journey and then reacting to the artwork that was displayed and also the exhibit.
So, tell me, you finished Grace Jones.
Yeah. So, Grace Jones was finished and I was raring and ready to go for the next one. So, I actually have my own personal collection of vintage memorabilia from like the 1950s and 40s. So that kind of subject just seemed like natural because at the time I still didn't really have that many people involved. So I was picking subjects that I could really like push.
Yeah.
So this time around, I had a lot of original 1950s memorabilia.
All yours?
Yeah, I own all of them. So like old records, original lobby cards, what they used to put in the movie theaters.
We're going to put a little montage of like what the night looked like.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But I do want to say, because obviously Grace Jones exhibit had a lot of prints, which was amazing. And Stage Exit also had some prints.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also had like physical vintage copies of posters, of like you said,
old records,
like, magazines,
vintage magazines. And like books and biographies. So it was a really cool opportunity to do some actual visual displays with vintage items.
Yeah.
So I'd say out of all of them, that one had probably the most to look at. So
yes.
You had prints, you had original art, and you had the show, and then you also had the physical exhibits as
well. Yeah, which was really cool. I saw a lot of people come to you and be like, can I buy these? And you were like, no. You had a poster of...
Down With Love?
Down With Love, but you also had a poster of what's that fantastic film with Elizabeth Taylor. It's one of your favorite.
The Opposite Sex.
The Opposite Sex, yes, which I've never seen, but now I have,
yeah.
Thanks to you. And, like, yeah, that poster, in mint condition, by the way.
Yeah, it's my pride and joy. I've had it for a long time.
So was it the fact that you already had the memorabilia that made you go, this should be the next subject for me?
Yeah, so it just seemed like a natural jump-off point. So I had the knowledge and the materials to do it. Mm. And then... yeah, so I just put the displays together. I did some research on some prints. And by this point, we had quite a few more artists involved. So this is when Ray Piper joined. Yeah.
Did four original pieces, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Mark
Tsang.
Yeah.
He joined on Stage Exit.
Which again, Mark Tsang is an international student living in Nottingham.
Mm-hmm.
So still a Nottingham-based artist, but also The Reach, right? So it's not just... for the Brits.
Yeah, and then Ava Ferreira, she joined in. So she's an international artist from Madeira in Portugal.
Ava Ferreira, who I bidded on one of the pieces, and I was outbidded, and I'm still very bitter about it. But it lives in my heart forever, which we'll go through.
Yeah, she did a fantastic series called Tinseltown Tragedies, and then she did this. Obviously, she couldn't fly over for it at the time. She was busy, but she sent over this really, really nice voice note.
Which was basically the first niche artifact podcast, which we'll play. It was amazing. And also, so obviously you are in the know, you know about these things, you've done your research, but also you went to film school. So I'm guessing you had some film history.
Course. Yeah, so we had the video installation as well. Yes. So I intercut loads of vintage 1940s and 50s stuff. So to play on the massive TV screen after the stage performance was finished. So that was like the atmosphere and the music, everything was just like such a vibe. Mm. Like the ambiance was 10/10.
Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit about, before we dive into the prints and the paintings and the art, the original artwork, I want to talk a little bit about how I got involved, because that was my first niche artifact.
Yeah.
So, Ray.
So, how did we... isn't this when I first met you?
Yes.
That was just before the stage exit. Exhibit.
Yes. So, Ray had already met you through Zoe Ellis,
mm-hmm.
fantastic Nottingham-based artist and craft teacher, come to spill the paint. So we introduced you to Ray, you guys hit it off. Ray, I remember, called me at one point and she was like, I've met this guy, he is amazing, you need to meet him. I'm going to drop off my artwork for his exhibition just before we go to our craft night. Do you want to come and meet him? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And we came to the bar that you used to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just got introduced. And I just remember... don't know why the subject came about. And I was just like, oh, you know, like most people can't tell that I'm Mexican, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, well, I can tell, honey. I can tell all about you. And I was like, I like this faggot. Can I say, you can bleep it out. But yeah, and we met there. And I remember Ray being like, oh, you should hear Ro sing. They're a fantastic singer, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. We have karaoke every Friday. Come around, blah, blah, blah. And then that Friday, I went out with my friends from work. And it was karaoke at the bar you used to manage.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And the atmosphere was right. And it was so nice. And then I remember I sang Poor Unfortunate Souls in the original key. And I just remember as I was singing, you were just like, hold on a minute. Wait a second.
Well, that was the first moment that I realized how talented you were. And I was just like, wow, this person is incredible.
Yeah, which is always like a double-edged sword to be a good singer at karaoke, because it's going to put people really off from singing.
Fuck them.
But also, it's my moment to shine. And unbeknownst to me, that was my audition for Niche Artifact. And I remember right then and there, after I finished Poor Unfortunate Souls, I was walking back to my group of colleagues. And you grabbed me and you were like, hey, do you know that thing that I'm doing? And I was like, yeah. And you were like, would you be interested in doing some songs? And I was like, oh, yes, absolutely. And
so was that, how long was it been since you performed since the first niche?
Oh my God. So Ray and I and the company that Ray used to be co-artistic director of, we worked all through 2019 on this show. Mm-hmm. featuring lots of choreographers and dancers and some singers. And like, I was doing music direction for that. And,
but you weren't actually performing.
And I was going to perform in it.
Okay.
And then we performed it once. We were meant to take it out on tour. Okay. And then our first performance was February 14th, 2020. And you can fill in the rest as to why we didn't perform.
Oh, well, so that because of what?
Because of the pandemic.
Yes.
Like, the show didn't go anywhere. And then after the pandemic, I tried to get back out there. And the industry was like, oh, no, we don't want that. And I was like, okay. And I just remember going to, like, endless auditions. So, yeah, I retired in the sense that, like, I told myself I don't want to perform anymore, sort of about 2022, just because it was more painful than it was bringing me joy. And then, but my last performance was, like, 2019, 2020.
Wow.
So I hadn't sang professionally until you said, would you mind singing at Niche?
Yeah.
And it was really cool. I remember my partner and I came into your bar one day when you were closed so that I could sing the songs that I had chosen.
Yeah.
And I remember Robin telling me, prepare three songs. And I was like, great, absolutely. And I did Fly Me to the Moon.
Yes.
Down with Love.
Moon River.
Four songs, sorry. Moon River as well. And then I did a song from If You Were Gay in the 2010s and you liked musical theater, you probably know about the show Smash. And if you don't, that is a sacrilege and you need to go watch it. Thank you. The song Smash is about the making of a musical, but it was like a drama show.
Yeah.
And they wrote original music for a Marilyn Monroe musical. Mm-hmm. And the title, the first song is called Let Me Be Your Star. And I sang that as well, which is a song that I absolutely love. And then I remember on the night, I had sang three of my four songs. We were leaving Let Me Be Your Star till the end. And I just remember you coming to me and you were saying like, I need more time. You need to perform something else. And I was like, I don't know what. And you were like, you need to figure it out. And
everyone has this image of me during like Niche. I don't know. I think I'm lovely during Niche.
You are so lovely. Lovely. Lovely McIntyre. But you are also like
a stress ball.
Yes. It's very much squirrel energy. Like, I need to put the nuts somewhere. They need to be somewhere. They need to be hidden. Nobody can look at my nuts. Which I love. But yeah, and then I sang, I think, Sound of Music. The hills are alive. With Sound of Music. And it was amazing. It was so good. And I sort of sang in between Art Unveilings and in between Priscilla's performance.
Who were the other performers? So was it just Priscilla?
It was just Priscilla and myself. Okay. So that was the first step into Niche becoming what it has become now, Niche Artifact Shows.
Yeah. Becoming an actual, like, production.
Yeah, Priscilla did this fantastic number too.
Oh, isn't that when Diamonds Are a Girl's
Best Friend?
So that was oh yes, I remember. Yes. That was, I think, one of our most iconic performances.
Absolutely.
With the big, the two wine glasses with diamonds in them.
Then she, yes. The end. Oh, so good.
And the outfit. She
looked beautiful. She always does. But yeah. I was like, ooh, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So, yeah, should we look at some artwork?
Yeah, sure.
Fabulous. We have a trusty little iPad here. Thank you, David.
Yeah, so we'll be, let's go through all of the prints that we did for the exhibit.
Yeah.
So we will be reacting to these and we'll pop them on the screen for you guys as well.
So the first piece that we have is Descent of a Rose.
Yeah.
Which is by Ray Piper. Ray Piper uses a mixed medium of art. She has started playing with oils, right, at the moment?
I think acrylics.
Acrylics,
yeah,
yes.
But yeah, she's doing some really cool stuff outside of her usual ink drawings.
But her first medium that she loves so much is Chinese ink on rice paper, which it fits her very well because Ray is very precise and Ray likes to do things right. And Chinese ink does not allow for any mistakes.
Yeah.
So every
stroke is recorded. You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong.
It will show up on the paper.
Yeah. And she did this fantastic four-piece. It's not a triptych because it's four, but whatever the word for triptych that is four, tell us down in the comments. But she did this four-piece about Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. So she talked about how the roses were her favorite flower, and she was also Hollywood's rose at the time. And it tells this beautiful story. So the first image is this sort of portrait of Marilyn Monroe really beautiful with her iconic beauty mark, the detail of the lips, the eyebrow, the lashes, the eyeliner that Marilyn Monroe was super famous for. Then the next one. Yes, we start to see the cracks in the foundation.
Yeah.
So it starts to be a bit smudgy. She started to add a little bit of color to them. So it has a little bit of red on the lip, which is really impactful.
It's really beautiful.
Mm. And then the next one is my favorite.
Yeah, that's my favorite too.
So I think there's a video of it, and if we can find it, we should post it. But
wasn't there like an eye condition that Marilyn had?
Yeah, well, so basically, when you overdose on barbiturates, your eyes go glassy, and she wanted to capture that. And obviously, Marilyn Monroe, we still don't know what actually happened, but died of a barbiturate overdose. And
do you know, it's insane the amount of stars in Hollywood during that time that were on barbiturates.
Yeah,
like that documentary that I saw about Carmen Miranda.
Carmen Miranda.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that's how her story ended as well.
Judy Garland.
Yeah.
Who looked surely 65.
Yeah.
By the time of her death, yeah. In her mid-40s.
Yeah. I think that kind of thing was rife in every kind of star in that time. So even though the big ones like Marilyn and Judy, but I think. Yeah. This was like obviously the norm, otherwise people wouldn't have done it in those times.
And on this, you see a lot more color. There's this beautiful red rose. I remember when this art got unveiled, I gasped because I'm gay, but many people gasped as well.
You're like, oh my God.
I was like, I went, oh my God, even though I had already seen them, but I don't care. And actually, little side note, that Ray made a print of it for my birthday, and I have it on my wall.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And the next is... We go back to black and white, and it's just these two roses that is all that remains.
Yeah. I think it's like symbolizing the death of her.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
So like a funeral rose.
A black rose.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. Ray, your art is so important. Please never stop making art.
Yeah. And for this was your first ever submission.
Yeah. This was Ray's first ever submission to Niche Artifact.
Knocked it out of the park.
I mean, what else do you want?
Yeah. And she's... been with us for every single one since, so we really appreciate the loyalty that she has with us.
Even when she hasn't been in the country, she has submitted art pieces.
Yeah, and she's so organized, Ray's like 2 months ahead of everyone, so she's like, she had her pieces done as soon as I announced the subject, and no, she's a little workhorse. I love Ray.
We love your art. Okay, next, we bring to the stage...
So we've got...
okay, so Darren, if you know Darren... Darren Barnum, he is a fantastic graphite, ink, mixed medium.
I think he uses acrylic and ink with his. Yeah. So you get this really nice, like kind of lino print kind of quality to his work.
You know what it also gives? You know in movies when someone's a photography major and they're in like the red room, like what do you call it? The dark room?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, it looks like a picture.
Yeah.
It's so good. His detail is so amazing. So the first one we have Rumors. Both of the pieces were called Rumors, but they had different subjects.
Yeah.
So the first rumor was Barbara Stanwyck. So shall I read what he wrote about his piece? So we can't say with absolute certainty that Barbara Stanwyck was a lesbian, but there are enough innuendo and rumor about the iconic actress's personal life that it seems pretty likely Stanwyck was at least open to girl-on-girl action. And even if she weren't a lesbian, her brassy and butch nature, both on screen and off, garnered her a loyal following from lesbians and gays everywhere.
Yeah.
I love the gloves. Because again, she has these boxing gloves on. She had this reputation for being very stern. She took no shit. She was very assertive.
I didn't really know much about this actress in particular, so there was insightful for me.
That's the beauty of Niche. We learned so much through the process. And then the next one of Darren's pieces, which again, this was another gasp. And I think this one sold.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this was great. Yeah.
So this is another Rumors piece. I'm just trying to load it. There we go. So this is called Rumors, James Dean and Marlon Brando. So it's ink and acrylic on canvas. Mm-hmm. Now we know the medium. So Darren writes, rumors that sexual relationships existed between the friends have long persisted, but now a book called James Dean, Tomorrow Never Comes, claims specific details from the early 1950s. So obviously James Dean and Marlon Brando, there was always like an alleged sort of rumor going on in the 1950s. And I love, Darren always likes to incorporate a bit of like, I think his artwork stems from a very proud LGBTQIA plus I.
There's always like a bit of history in it.
There's always a bit of history.
There's always a story linked to like a bit of history and pride. And I think, you know, it's something that he's been doing and will continue to do.
Yeah, so we obviously have, we have them in like a cowboy outfit and like a little Tom of Finland moment as well, which is really like just stunning. I love Darren's art. I have yet to not be outbidded.
Yeah, to be fair, Darren's been a showstopper from the beginning. Yeah. And he's, like Ray, since he joined with Stage Exit, he has been exhibiting every single time. So we are so grateful to have such a wonderful talent like Darren to continue to support us.
We really are. Thank you, Darren. Thank you. Next, we have...
This was Emma's first piece that she ever did for us. So Emma, she does oil and canvas. So there's plenty to unpack in this one. I mean, if you look at the like the shape of the perfume bottle and
it's a vagoo.
Yeah, and just like it's just stunning. I don't think it was modeled after any particular actress or anything.
No, and I love we said this on the first episode of Niche. She always sneak in a flower, she will always sneak in a rose. But she talked about how the vase is empty, the vase.
Yeah, so there was a story behind this in regards to having the face covered with flowers. So it was to represent like all the kind of beauties, the unknown beauties that Hollywood kind of ate up, I think, like as a machine.
Because it went through women.
Oh, definitely.
You could be an Academy Award winning actress on Monday and destitute on Wednesday. Like, it was wild.
Yeah. So this was Emma's first piece. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. A proper showstopper.
Another gay gasp moment, like, through the audience. I think this was the last piece you unveiled.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, this was the final one.
Cool.
Okay, so up next, we've got the Tinseltown Tragedies. So this one was done by Ava Ferreira. So it was a series of six, starting with the number one, which is Marilyn Monroe. So Marilyn Monroe was found dead on August the 4th, 1962. The toxicology report showed that the cause of death was acute barbiturate poisoning. She had 8 milligrams per 100 milliliters of the solution, and an empty medicine bottle was found next to her. The possibility that Monroe had accidentally overdosed was ruled out because the dosages found in her body were several times the lethal limit. And then the second one we have was the Grace Kelly.
Yeah.
So the Grace Kelly suffered a cerebral hemorrhage while driving back to Monaco. She lost control of her 1971 Rover and drove off the steep road and down a mountainside of 37 meters.
Mm.
So each piece is inspired by like a tragedy that's happened to one of the artists. Sharon Tate was the next one. So shortly after midnight, Tate was murdered by members of the Manson family cult. And then we have Elizabeth Short. So Elizabeth Short, known posthumously as the Black Dahlia, mm-hmm. was an American woman found murdered in the Laimert Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. Her case became highly publicized owing to some gruesome nature of the crime, which included mutilation of her corpse. And then the next one was Jane Mansfield. So Jane Mansfield was in a car crash at high speed into the rear of a tractor. There were three adults in the front seat, died instantly. Her children survived with minor injuries. And then the final one on the series is Natalie Wood. So on this one, Natalie Wood died under mysterious circumstances at age 43 during the making of Brainstorm. So this was Ava Ferreira's first ever contribution towards Niche Artifact. So they're incredible. Like the colours on each one and the concept, Tinseltown Tragedies, like who thinks of that?
The blackout eyes.
Yeah, and like everyone has blacked out eyes to represent the death that they had. And yeah, the concept is amazing. And she sent this to us. She was really panicking because she didn't have enough time to do what she wanted. So she classed these pieces as a case study. So hopefully this could be a series that she'll revisit. And
hopefully.
Because I just think the concept is out of this world.
It's out of this world. It is also something that, like, we still talk about now. You know, we're coming up, we're closer to 100 years from that than closer to it.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about it. It's still unsolved mysteries. Nobody knows truly what happened.
We will play the little audio clip.
Yes.
We'll insert that into here.
Because she couldn't be there, so she sent a little
voice note. Will play that over so we can hear Ava's interpretation of it, which sounded like a wonderful little podcast novel in itself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ava Ferreira, the creator of the Tinseltown Tragedies, featuring six iconic women whose deaths are darkened by rumors and conspiracy theories. Marilyn Monroe, the original blonde bombshell whose suicide is subject to debate to this day. Some believe that she was assassinated because she knew too much due to her affair with JFK. Sharon Tate, infamously murdered by the Manson family, believed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But was she? Grace Kelly, the most sought-after and elegant actresses of all time, who died tragically in a car accident. Some say it was actually her daughter, Stephanie, who was underage at the time, was driving. Some say it was a mob hit. Jane Mansfield, another blonde bombshell who died tragically young. She died in a car accident. Some say her ties to the Church of Satan got her killed. Natalie Wood. Some say Robert Wagner, a fellow actor, was responsible for her drowning, yet it wasn't proven. Suspicion still shrouds her death. And then finally we have Elizabeth Short, known as the Black Dahlia. Some say she was a struggling actress, but it's debated. All we know is that she was murdered in the most gruesome manner. Most suspect the work of an unknown serial killer. Her death, to this day, remains a cold case. And I just wanted to say a special thank you to Robin for organizing this wonderful event. I'm sorry that I could not be there personally. And I just wanted to give you warm greetings to everyone at the GOATS this evening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for supporting the arts.
Beautiful art, Ava. Please keep making art. Holy cow. Right, next we have...
So the next one, this wasn't done as a submission. This is actually from my own personal collection. So the little story behind this is that I actually found this painting in like the in rubbish, like in a skip where it was just going to get thrown away. So I rescued it out of the trash. And this one's called Number 7. So in April 1960, Marilyn was interviewed for a French magazine on the set of Let's Make Love. And now, 52 years later, Chanel has got hold of the interview tapes, which Marilyn reflects in her comment. They ask you questions. Just an example, what do you wear to bed? Do you wear pajama top, the bottoms of pajamas, or a nightgown? So I said Chanel number 5, because it's the truth. And yet, I don't want to say nude, but it's the truth. So this was inspired famously from those interview tapes where Marilyn said that all she wears to bed is Chanel number 5. So this was also done by Ava Ferreira, but I rescued it from the rubbish and I love it.
I love it too. It's really beautiful.
So it fit the theme of stage exit, but definitely was part of the exhibit.
Okay. Next up we have...
So this is another piece from Ava. This was actually a gift from her to me. This was one of her pieces featuring the famous Marlboro brand cigarette packets in her signature pop art style, which is very like Andy Warhol. So this was just a personal gift to me. So I also included that on the exhibit as well.
It's really amazing to think about like how cigarettes were doctor recommended at one point in time.
Oh, yes.
It's also, I don't think anybody didn't smoke in the golden age of Hollywood. Yeah. You see pictures of every starlet, every famous actor with a cigarette in hand, so it's still, or in the mouth, still very like...
Yeah, like in some of those old magazines that were on display, some of them had still those adverts of like a good clean smoke.
Yeah, literally. It's hilarious. Oh. So next we have Chelsea Marie.
Yeah.
Again, Chelsea Marie, first ever niche was the Grace Jones exhibit.
Yes.
And in the picture, you can see, again, her art style is very hers. Mm-hmm. We have a mixed media. We have graphite, resin, and glass on canvas. This is Audrey Hepburn. That's the title of the piece. It's a beautiful portrait, very Breakfast at Tiffany's tea. Mm-hmm. And she writes, "The glimmering and silver dust background sets the stage for an enchanting portrayal of my childhood icon, Audrey Hepburn. Capturing the essence of her iconic role in Breakfast at Tiffany's, the glitter resin-like stardust adds a touch of magic, depicting the glamorous world of Hollywood's golden era. The black outline serves as a cinematic frame, inviting spectators to step into the timeless allure of Audrey Hepburn and her unforgettable role."
This was definitely a showstopper. Yeah. It's just got that classic Chelsea look.
Yeah.
And I can never get enough of it.
Me neither. I think you had this on the wall for a while after the exhibit.
Yeah, so like the really great thing about having being able to manage the bar while doing these is that we had the opportunity to rotate the artwork and still have people, you know, see them and get exposure. So even when the show was over, we still made an effort to make sure that everyone's artwork was on rotation.
Well, somewhere. And you had a little thing at the bar saying like, all pieces are up for sale, contact.
Yeah, yeah. So we encouraged anyone to make an offer. So, you know, just try and support the artist.
And then the next Chelsea piece, which, and again, I got outbidded. This is Ruby Reverie, an ode to Oz.
Awesome title.
So good. So again, we have acrylic, resin, and glass on canvas. I'm going to read.
Yeah.
"A magical journey. This vivid portrayal of the iconic Wizard of Oz red shoes against the mysterious black backdrop. A glossy allure, with the hope to entice viewers into a world of enchantment and timeless fantasy. A reminder that there's no place like home through the eyes of imagination."
That's beautiful.
That's so beautiful.
So this was quite a large... I think this is the largest piece she's ever done.
Yes. Although Birth of Pride was huge.
Oh, yeah. But, it was quite a big one.
Yeah. But yeah, this is so beautiful. It makes me feel like, you know, when Dorothy goes, there's no place like home, and she transports, she goes back to Kansas without the shoes, and I feel like that's what it's capturing there. The shoes just stayed inside of this like magic.
Yeah, and the gold used in this is just stunning.
So beautiful. It looks like a galaxy.
So up next we've got the first ever piece for Mark Tsang, which is a little cutie. Yeah, we love Mark.
We love you, Mark.
He's incredibly talented, and every one of his pieces has sold, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. I have one in my bedroom.
Which one do you have in your bedroom? Oh, okay.
The one from Erotica.
We'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is called Who Am I? It's a digital illustration. So being stuck in the limbo of not feeling Chinese enough or American enough was what Anna May Wong felt during her acting career. This painting shows the struggle of her cultural identity and reflects on the cultural authenticity during the golden age of Hollywood.
I'm going to get vulnerable on the channel. I remember crying when he explained the piece because, and I'm pretty sure you can relate to this as well, being foreign to the country where you live in is this weird mix of you want to be proud of your heritage, but you're too much of where you came from to fully fit in where you are.
Yeah.
But then even when you go back home, you don't fit in anymore.
You feel like a foreigner now.
You feel like a foreigner now in your home. And when he was talking about this piece, I got really emotional. And I was like, oh crap, my mascara's gonna run. Mm. But yeah, I relate to that. I think it's a very universal thing. Mm. And it was so beautifully captured. The sort of like split focus. It was a beautiful piece.
Yeah. No, I can relate to that completely, obviously, being of mixed heritage and growing up in different countries.
Yeah.
That's kind of something that I've always kind of battled with internally of like, if I went back, I wouldn't feel I'm too English to go back. And mm-hmm. then like, it's a thing.
But you're too
English to go back.
To go back. But then here.
And then here, obviously, like I've been.
You use too many spices in your cooking to be British.
Exactly.
So, the next piece that we have is by Zoe Ellis.
Yes.
Again, Same as with Darren. Zoe loves to incorporate anything gay into their work. They love to show a little bit of, like, the inside history of, like, blah, blah, blah.
The tea, honey.
So this is digital art, and it was inspired by a vintage photograph. So it says, showing lesbian pride in an era when it was a lot more taboo to be queer. This piece combines modern aesthetics with vintage undertones to create a visually harmonious piece that celebrates love in the face of adversity. I love this. So we obviously added the pins with the lesbian flag.
Yeah.
I think the kisses are in the original photograph. This is beautiful. And I have this, actually. I have a print of this in my living room.
I'm surprised you have any wall space left.
I know! I hope, honestly, one day there is no more white in my house and it is just artwork
everywhere. I would be fine with that.
Yeah, me too. And
yeah, okay. That was all the artwork that we had exhibited for Stage Exit.
So, just as a little recap, you went, because I wasn't a part of Niche for the first one, but you went from an art exhibit with 4 original art pieces to an art exhibit with 15 original art pieces.
Is that how many we had?
15.
Okay.
And you went from 4 artists to Ava, Chelsea, Darren, James, Mark, Zoe, and Ray, 7.
Yeah.
That's so almost amazing. Double.
Yeah. That's incredible.
I'm very proud of you. I know it's like seen badly to be like, yes, I did that, but you did do that. And like my involvement with Niche was very minimal at that point. So this was truly all you.
I mean, like Stage Exit was a real jump from the first one.
Yeah.
Like, the atmosphere, just the whole package, like Stage Exit is when Niche became a package deal.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like, oh, let's just see if this sticks. So
no,
definitely. Like the art, the exhibits, everything was fantastic. But yeah, so what we'll do is move on to the prints that were part of the
fabulous
exhibit.
Yes, please, because I have a print in my home as well.
And we'll also have some bonus ones. So there'll be ones on here that were shortlisted but didn't make it to the walls. So the first one we have is a still from Boys and Girls from 1955.
Yeah, this is stunning. I wanted to say, I said to you during the break, this was the first and only Niche artifact that I got to experience because I wasn't madly changing costume in between art reveals.
Welcome to the family.
I know. But yeah, so this is still from Boys and Girls.
1955. So another example of digitally restored photos. So there are elements in this that I've had to duplicate and replicate to try and make it right. Some color grading. And look at it.
It's so crisp. You could have told me this was filmed today.
It's literally the epitome of MGM, Hollywood. The fashion, the girls, the figures, the makeup.
The tiny, tiny little waists, corseted to hell.
Yeah, this beautiful. Is everything.
Right, and then the second one.
So up next we've got, this is a production painting. So this would be used for the promotion for Cleopatra. So this was 1963.
Yeah.
And so just some facts about this one. So adjusted for inflation, this is one of the most expensive movies ever made.
Oh, wow.
A budget of $44 million is the equivalent to $400 million
Jesus Christ.
These days.
Elizabeth Taylor, right?
Yeah, so yeah, this was the iconic. Oh, just look at the colours on this are just everything.
Mm.
I would have this as a wallpaper in my home.
I know that blood oxidises, but it looks like blood in the background. Like, it's so rich, so carnal.
Rich!
I love it.
It is honestly one of so my beautiful. Most favourite things ever.
Yeah.
So the movie broke even in 1973. 20th Century Fox closed the books on it, keeping all future profits a secret to avoid paying those who might have been promised a percentage of the profits.
Very of the time.
Very MGM, darling.
Very MGM.
Shady lady.
Have you ever watched the TV show Feud?
No.
We'll talk about it after we react to these prints. Oh my God. Okay. Next. So yeah, Gene Kelly, Singing in the Rain, classic.
Yeah. So this was 1952. So just some facts about behind the prints. So the original negative of this film was actually destroyed in a fire.
Gay gas. truly a gay gasp.
So this was also selected into the National Film Registry in 1989 for the first year of its induction for being culturally and historically and aesthetically significant.
Yeah.
According to the widow of Patricia Ward Kelly, the famous rain dance sequence took a day and a half to shoot, mm-hmm. and Kelly was actually quite unwell at the time as a temperature of 103 degrees.
I bet. Well, Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yes. Celsius, he'd be dead. Well, he is dead, but you know. Fun fact about this that I learned in film school / musical theater school. In order for the camera to be able to capture the rain, this was actually a 50-50 mix of milk and water.
What?
Yes, because water, the camera couldn't capture the water, so they had to, like, blur it, like, make it a little bit more colorful with milk. So not only did Kelly probably feel really ill because of the water, but you also probably smell very mildewy by the end of filming that scene, because you were getting, you know, milky water.
That's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah, I adore the lighting in this one. Mm. The yellow at the top and the contrast with all the blue.
You have the warmth coming only from the street light, and then everything else is very cold. It's really beautiful.
I mean, like, the aesthetics from those eras, they're just... I don't think we've ever had anything quite like it.
No, I think La La Land sort of, like, pushed it as far as anybody has pushed it in, like, recent times.
Yeah.
I'm a La La Land apologist. Have you seen La La Land?
I enjoyed La La Land.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good.
Keeping it PC on the pod. Right. Next up we have, Gone with the Wind. Beautiful.
So Gone with the Wind, this was in 1939.
Yeah.
So it was the first color film to mm-hmm. win an Academy Award for Best Picture. And when they finished shooting it, there was actually 88 hours of footage.
Oh my God. Yeah, because isn't there like an extended version that's like 3.5 hour long or 4 hours long?
I've been meaning to rewatch this for a while now, actually. But when I was doing the research, so this was actually a still from the movie and the lighting and the aesthetics of
this.
It's
so beautiful.
Look at the sparkle in her eye and the use of the shadows in that. It's just so beautiful.
Super controversial film shoot. There was a lot of like negative press around it. There was a lot of drama, behind the scenes drama, but such a fantastic film. We should have a movie night and watch that.
Yes, of course. So some facts about this was Michael Jackson reportedly paid over $1.5 million in 1999 to purchase the Best Picture Oscar that this won.
Love!
And the film script changed almost daily, and the cast did not receive a final version of the script until after the film was completed.
Love that. That's demented. I hope they never remake this.
I think it'll be impossible.
Yeah.
Well. You know what? You know what the kids in the studios are like these days, remake anything.
Mm-hmm. Then we have an Andy Warhol portrait of Judy Garland.
Yes, so this was an actual Andy Warhol piece that he did.
Mm-hmm. This is beautiful. This is, again, when we were reacting to the Grace Jones exhibit, Prince, we had an Andy Warhol as well.
And also, a very interesting fact about this is that Andy Warhol, he notoriously focused his pieces on actresses later on in their lives. So out of respect for Judy Garland, he loved Judy that much that he chose to do this portrait based on when she was younger. And you can tell in the face and the way that this print has been done, she looks like vibrant and young and beautiful. Whereas most of Andy's other print portraits were always intentionally done towards the end of the actress's life, which I just thought was really poetic and beautiful.
Well, yeah.
That the respect that Andy had for her.
It was this whole thing of like, it was such a tragic end for what was probably one of the most famous women at the time. So I think that was a very respectful thing to do. Yeah. And if you love the subject, wouldn't you want to, you know...
Yeah, do it justice and respectfully. So, no, I really admire Andy for doing that with this portrait.
I love the blue eyeshadow, the blue garage door. I love the red lip. I love the wonkiness of the lip.
Mm.
I think it's really beautiful. Cool. Next up we have... Okay. When I saw Kylie Minogue as Marlene Dietrich, I screamed.
It is probably one of the most unknown and unseen photos of Kylie Minogue. So
this is beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this. This is perfect. Perfect makeup. The contouring, the lip, the bone, the like pencil thin eyebrows. This is what I think I look like when I'm on stage. And I look nothing like that. I look nothing of the sort.
So some interesting facts about Marlene Dietrich. So yeah. Her makeup man said that she kissed so hard that she needed a new coat of lipstick after every kiss that she ever gave.
That means that you, me, and everybody watching at home, we have never been kissed properly.
No. And then another one, for example, is that she sucked lemon wedges between takes to keep her mouth muscles tight.
Work.
Pro tips.
Work!
So she...
So if you see me sucking on a lemon, you know what I'm doing.
She started to train to be a violinist until she was injured, and she switched to acting. That's
a good pivot.
Yeah. And in 1933, she was detained at a train station in Paris for violating a ban about women wearing trousers.
Work! Yes!
So she was a little maverick in her day.
And again, this is Kylie Minogue, but she looks...
Yeah. So this was obviously in tribute to her. It was a photo shoot that she did.
I love this print so much. Okay, cool. Next up we have... Okay, I have this in... Oh, no, I don't have this one. Okay, but it's a Marilyn Monroe, the very famous Marilyn Monroe on Lexington and 52nd Street on top of the subway grades, dress flowing in the air. Again, if you were gay between the years of 2010 and 2014, you probably watched Smash and you know the very famous song, On Lexington and 52nd Street. Anyway, back to you, Bob.
So Marilyn Monroe stood on top of the subway grate for this particular shot 14 times, taking around 3 hours to film just this scene. The scene took 14 takes to get right, and while 100 male photographers, between 2,000 and 5,000 spectators, who all loudly reacted whenever her skirt blew up, looked on while they were filming the scene.
Yeah. Did you know that this was also when her marriage collapsed with Joe DiMaggio?
Oh.
This was the thing that made him go, done.
So this was the catalyst, because obviously this was like a huge cultural moment.
Yeah, but it was at that point when he thought that, like, very men of the time of, like, you either love me or you love the spotlight. And he was like, oh, she loves the spotlight too much. She can't love me. She can't be the housewife that she never promised to be. And he left her. Although Joe DiMaggio, bless you, Joe DiMaggio was the only one of her lovers that did anything when she died to, like, you know,
commemorate her.
So, but yeah, that was the moment when her marriage exploded.
Wow.
Mm. Next we have, yes, okay, this is the potato dress. I have this on a print that Robin gave me after performing on my first niche, stage exit, the Golden Age of Hollywood. I reacted so vividly to this that you just gifted this to me. I love this. Please tell me the story behind this. Please tell the children at home the story behind this.
Why? So once again, there's another bonus picture that wasn't exhibited, which was another take on this one,
okay,
which you're going to die when you see.
Yes.
So the... like, if there had been an internet in 1951, the dress would have broken it.
Yeah.
When the Cat E! Newspaper columnist said that Marilyn Monroe would look better off wearing a potato sack, she did just that. The story of how the blonde bombshell ended up in a fitted burlap sack has a couple of different versions, but the most entertaining one is the one in 1951. Monroe was attending a party at Beverly Hills Hotel and was wearing a dress that was on the low side, much to the chagrin of the female newspaper columnist. Apparently, they said that Monroe was cheap, vulgar, and that she had been better off suited to wear a potato sack. Monroe, whose sense of humor continued to be one of the most underappreciated things about her, decided to take the columnist at her word, and the producers at 20th Century Fox immediately organized a photo shoot for her, complete with a fitted Idaho potato sack and red high heels. In a twist that surprised absolutely no one, she looked stunning, according to Monroe. The photos were so successful that the Idaho potato farmer actually sent her a whole sack of potatoes as a thank you for the generous publicity. But Monroe apparently never got to enjoy them, saying there was a potato shortage on then and the boys in publicity stole them all. I never saw a single potato.
Oh, no! I also...
Someone stole Marilyn Monroe's potatoes.
If you're watching this and you stole some of the potatoes, give them back. There was also all of this discourse. A lot of people used to say that she wasn't beautiful and that she was only beautiful because she wore gowns, beautiful gowns. Mm-hmm. And I think she truly shut everybody up.
Yeah, like this would literally, like I said, this would have broken the internet if this happened today.
Absolutely.
Like, what a legendary move. And this photo in particular, I think I ended up having to do a deep dive on some like Japanese websites.
Yeah.
It was like, it's so hard to find this image. I'm so glad I did, and I managed to get it at this quality. It's amazing.
I'm so glad it's in my living room. I look at it every day. I love it so much. Oh, right. Next we have Marlon Brando in The Wild Ones. So again, a little bit of the inspiration behind Darren's piece. We have Marlon Brando in this, like, obviously it's not Tom O'Finland because that's not what he was doing, but it's very like motorcycle.
This is what inspired Tom O'Finland, like, yeah, this kind of look of masculinity, which was, you know, I mean, look at him.
Yeah.
Like on a...
That's a man.
That's a man, Mary. So this was The Wild One, 1953. So some facts about this movie was that during their lunch breaks, Marlon Brando and his leading lady Murphy would stay in character while they were at the studio commissary. So while they were having lunch with everyone, they never broke character and stayed in character. The film was rejected for UK cinema classification in 1954, and the BBFC was finally granted an X rating in November in 1967 after a 13-year ban.
Damn.
So the director Stanley Kramer hired real biker gangs to play themselves, and the reflecting on the movie in his autobiography, Marlon Brando concluded that it had not aged very well, but said that most of the parts I've played in movies or on stage, I related to Johnny because of this. I believe I played him a more sensitive and sympathetic than the script envisioned. There's a line in the picture where he snarls, "Nobody tells me what to do." That's exactly how I felt all my life.
Love it. So good, so powerful. This film, I've never seen, but I know it was like a cultural moment.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what launched him into being like a sex icon, I guess, in those days.
Yeah, I love this thing about staying in character in between, like, takes. I think it's so... I'm not a good actor by any means of the imagination, unless I'm singing. And I just think it's very silly. I think it's Toni Collette who says that, like, she just goes in, she says her lines, and then she leaves. Because people are like, how do you recover from, like, doing, like, all of these roles? And she's like, I just do my job.
And go home.
Right, next we have another one of Marlene Dietrich.
Yes, so this is one of the bonus ones. So unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, we had a lot more artwork for Stage Exit. So I had to cut down on the prints. So this is one of the ones that we had to cut out. But this is an absolutely stunning picture.
So good.
Marlene Dietrich.
And you can see how well Kylie was painted to portray her.
Mm.
She's so stern. I want her to slap me.
Mm.
Non-sexually. No. That would be sexually. We don't want to get demonetized when we're not making money. She looks amazing. Right. And next we have...
Yes.
Another one.
Another Marlene.
Shanghai Express.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, another one that didn't make it, but look at that photo.
Stunning. Oh, the hair. Is that a cigarette? Yeah, elevating the beauty.
Of course.
Elevating the beauty.
Elevate the beauty with a cigarette.
There we go. Oh, Stunisha.
Honestly, that picture makes me speechless.
Yeah. And it's a still from the... It's a still from the film.
Yeah, from Shanghai.
Oh, and then we have another potato dress.
Yeah,
oh.
So this is the bonus potato dress photo, so...
Work me out. She is so beautiful.
Isn't that something? And I guarantee you've never seen that photo before.
Never.
I had to deep dive to get these pictures.
Love this. Oh, and last but not least, we have Elvis Presley in Jailhouse Rock.
Yes, so this is another one that didn't make it. I wanted to have a nice balance between male and female. So Elvis Presley was one of the ones that we looked into. So, and I absolutely adore the style of posters that they used to do.
Yeah.
The posters in the MGM period were kind of like pieces of art in their own respect.
Yeah.
So they were paintings.
Yeah, So photography wasn't as readily available as it is now. So most of the posters were hand-painted. Yeah.
Well, you can achieve such, like, I think, otherworldly colours with painting. And I think that's what they were going for.
Because,
you know, these were very dark and desperate times for people. So they relied on the...
on whatever they
on the movie studios to be like, we need to make things look as bright and beautiful and hopeful as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an example of that.
Okay. So please let us know in the comments down below, what was your favourite print? If you've never seen the potato dress... let us know down, because I honestly, I'm a huge Marilyn Monroe fan. I'd never seen the potato dress before.
Really?
Never.
Okay.
Never. And I love the woman. So yeah, let us know down in the comments what your favorite print is and what your favorite art piece is as well.
So the next Niche Artifact Jamboree is going to be announced now. So okay. The next talker that we have is Georgina Wilding. So some of you might recognize Georgina. She has helped us with co-hosting with the Niche Artifact on the main stage at Birth of Pride for the last one. So just a little introduction about Georgie.
She is the first ever UNESCO City of Literature Young Poet Laureate from Nottingham.
Yeah, her poetry focuses on social commentary and expression. Georgina is the founding editor of Mud Press, Nottingham's own independent poetry publishing house, which is amazing. And she has been commissioned by organisations such as the BBC to write and perform, has toured her poetry in UK, Germany, and recently performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. She has a first-class degree in creative professional writing from the University of Nottingham.
Yeah.
And began a career in poetry working with spoken word collective Mouthy Poets. So, like,
it's amazing.
How amazing are those achievements?
And again, wide range of art forms for Niche Artifact, right? Mm-hmm. We have paintings, we have digital art, we have performing, yeah. We have poetry.
We have poets, yeah. And our poets have been very successful so far that we've had.
And also, Georgina Wilding is the events lead at Nottingham Central Library, which is how we got our new home for the Niche Artifact artist exhibition.
Yeah, so that's how we got a contact there. So we've got Niche Artifact Jamboree. The next one will be on the 24th of October.
I'm so excited. I will be there for this one.
Yeah, so there will be a Thursday. Thursday, the 24th of October. I will be there with Georgie to go through her journey that she has, the advice. And Georgie is just an amazing human being.
She's so inspiring.
She's hilarious. She's sweet.
So funny.
I'm so blessed to know her, and I'm really excited to share her story.
Yeah, me too. And if you don't follow her, we will put a little bit of her social media on screen right now. So please go and follow Georgie. She is a fantastic Nottingham-based poet, event organizer, and just badass.
Yeah.
She is it, kids.
Yeah, and just take this last opportunity to remind you that this is the last time that you're going to hear about Dystopia. So
until we review and react to the artwork.
Yes, and we will be going through all the backstage rehearsals. So we'll be filming the final dress rehearsal, and it'll be a moment.
Mm.
So get your tickets from Gigantic. Just go to nicheartifact.co.uk. All the information's there, or underneath this video, there will be links. And so if you can leave us a like and let us know what you thought about the video.
Yeah, what was your favorite part? What was your favorite print? What was your favorite artwork? And again, don't forget, 20th of September at Nottingham Central Library, Niche Artifact presents Dystopia. It's going to be truly a moment.
Yeah, it's going to be a production.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Hopefully see you there. And thanks again, Robin, for doing this with me.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Rob.
All right. See you on the next one. Bye.
Bye-bye.